From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where Michelle discusses the issues of the day with The Conversation's politics team.
Hi, my name's Amanda Dunn. I'm the politics and society editor for The Conversation, and I'm speaking with Michelle Grattan. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Amanda, from one of the few non-lockdown areas in the country, it seems.
Yes, you think yourselves lucky. So, Michelle, obviously the COVID outbreaks that we're seeing at the moment are continuing to dominate the news. Victoria's lockdown has been extended by a week. South Australia has been put into lockdown. And while Gladys Berejiklian says that New South Wales is seeing some green shoots, as she calls them, they're still a long way from being able to resume normal life, aren't they? How is this all playing out politically for the premiers and for the Prime Minister, do you think?
I think everyone is quite shocked about where we are at this moment, because if you think back only a couple of months, it just seemed so different and we were doing well, and now everything's been transformed. My impression is that what's happened in New South Wales has particularly come as a big surprise, because we were hearing that New South Wales was able to maintain its position, living with a few cases, having very limited lockdowns, limited restrictions, and now it's the most uncertain place in the country. So that's having a psychological effect, I think. And from what you can gather from the news media, especially big psychological effect on people around Sydney, because they just hadn't contemplated being in this situation. Now, I know you're in Victoria and it's really bad down there, but it does seem somewhat more manageable, the prospects, and also, of course, Victorians have been through this so many other times.
Yes, that's right. And I think with this Delta strain too, it's really put paid to the notion that you can have a sort of soft lockdown and get it under control, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It has transformed everything, and it's made people think, well, we're now in the second year of this COVID crisis, and while thankfully we're not having the huge number of deaths we had during that Victorian lockdown last year, nevertheless, the prospects of getting back to normal life just seem almost as far away as ever, frankly, and people are thinking about how complicated it's going to be to get back to even vaguely where we were before this pandemic, because coming out of the restrictions that we have, even apart from the lockdowns, is going to be very difficult. How are we going to open the international border? That just seems a huge challenge. And even when the vaccine rollout is completed, and that's ages and ages away, we're still then going to be faced with a situation of having to live with a fairly substantial number of cases, probably in the community.
Yes, and the Prime Minister is back in quarantine again, this time in Canberra, as he waits for Parliament to start again soon. What will the current COVID situation mean for Parliament resuming, Michelle? How will that affect things?
At the moment, it's pretty confused. People say Parliament will definitely resume. There's apparently necessary legislation to do with financial support, which has to be passed. But exactly how it's going to work is not clear. You would expect that certainly the number of staff coming will be minimised, and perhaps the number of parliamentarians as well. ACT Health, which is determining much of the situation or the conditions for people in Canberra, has various rules, which is not total quarantine, but people will need to stay in their houses and just go to Parliament. Now, the Prime Minister is in Canberra and he's under these sort of restrictions. He's obviously staying at the lodge. He can come to Parliament, but I think not circulate in all areas of Parliament House. He has to go to his office, the cabinet room, maybe other areas. Apparently there'll be arrangements for press conferences, but we haven't seen him up so far. And he is obviously operating under reasonably restricted conditions, but clearly he didn't want to be in the situation of operating virtually, because that really doesn't work for him appearing on the big screen in the House of Representatives. He just looks irrelevant, frankly.
And he is actually under pressure on a number of fronts, isn't he? Because we've seen recently the latest news poll, for example, that people are losing faith in their ability to deal with the pandemic. You would think particularly with the vaccine rollout, which we all know has been pretty poor. So they were at 53-47 favouring Labor on a two-party preferred basis. Obviously, we're still a long way out from an election, which is likely next year. But do you think this will stick?
Yes, I think some of it will stick. I think the election is much more open than it seemed a few months ago. The government obviously has time to recover. The opposition has time to build its case. But I think that the Prime Minister at the moment is just in a really bad position. Not just News Poll, but a couple of other polls have come out this week, and they all show that he's losing a lot of skin. And of course, what's critical now is getting the rollout moving back on track and down that track as fast as possible. And yet, despite the delivery of, or the bring forward of, these Pfizer doses, there's still going to be a vaccine shortage, a Pfizer shortage, for some weeks to come. And there's no way that the government can do anything about that. And you've seen with this changing advice about AstraZeneca, a lot of hesitancy about that vaccine. The logistics still seem far from totally efficient in getting the vaccines to where they need to be. And so I think that the rollout presents problems for quite a long time, which are likely to extend into months rather than weeks. And even that deadline of everyone having one jab by the end of the year, it'll take some work to meet that deadline.
Mm. And finally, Michelle, just on another issue, the so-called car park rorts story this week got considerably worse. Basically, the story is that in the lead up to the 2019 election, the coalition government promised millions of dollars in car parks attached to railway stations in marginal seats. There have been a lot of accusations of pork barrelling in recent years, but the mud on this somehow never seems to stick. Why do you think this is, and do you think this one is likely to have any long-term implications for the government?
I don't think it'll have as many implications as the sports rorts affair, because I think that it's being overwhelmed by the COVID issues, the lockdowns and the challenges that individuals are facing all around the place. And so I think the public's mind is so concentrated on these COVID issues and the implications for families and so on, that everything else just gets crowded out. But undoubtedly, this scheme was outrageous. It did not have the proper processes that should have been attached to the scheme for determining where these car parks were needed, where they were most useful. It was put in just to garner votes, basically, and even in terms of the way it did operate, it was inefficient. It was an outrageous example of political rorting, and I think that people should be quite disgusted with how the government behaved in it. But whether it really deters the government when it comes to the next election from behaving like this again, from thinking up some quick way to try and impress voters in marginal seats, remains to be seen. But certainly I think it deserves as much airing as it can get, even in times when people's attention is basically elsewhere.
Yes, well, it does feel as though unless something radical changes soon, we're probably going to see stories like this again. All right, Michelle, always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Amanda.
Our theme music is by Blue Dot Sessions. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.